Welcome to Scary Storytime by Spooky Boo. www.scarystorytime.com. Call my name. The house had an uneasy feeling about it. Mark had seen it first and he'd fallen in love with it. She knew that any house she showed him after that would never match up to the chocolate-brown cottage on the outskirts of the small, old-fashioned village. The quirky wooden beams in the rustic lounge, the quaint thatched roof, the overgrown, bewitching garden with its secret hideaways and colorful flowers. He'd fallen for the house the moment he saw it, and from that day on, Sophie knew her fate was sealed. It was inevitable. Her husband always won. They moved on November 11th. All their modern things looked strange amongst the old brick walls and the looming ceilings. Sophie put her juice mixer on the stone kitchen counter and stared at it, thinking about how displaced it looked, and then how displaced she was herself. She'd always wanted to live in the city in a modern apartment, but they couldn't afford to live in the city unless they sacrificed comfortable living for squalor, and all the apartments she had shown Mark had failed to impress. Deep down, she too knew they were horrible. So here they were, in the desolate countryside with an hour's commute to Mark's job every single day. Sophie was still searching for employment, and she thought glumly of how she would be on her own day after day until she too found a soulless office job. Still, a soulless office job surrounded by other people had to be better than life in the country by herself, even without a pet to keep her company due to Mark's allergies. They began to settle in over the next few days, unpacking boxes and putting up old pictures. They met some of the neighbors, mostly retired couples, who were bemused by the 20-somethings that had moved out to the back of the beyond and come voluntarily at that. Sophie took an immediate liking to the woman who lived next door, an old lady in her 80s who was virtually housebound and had a dry sense of humor that reminded Sophie of her own deceased grandmother. Sophie decided that she would be neighborly and offered to bring the woman groceries, even take her out once in a while, but it appeared quickly that the woman had several friends in the village who had already cheerfully taken on these burdens. Regardless, Sophie went to visit her often anyway, as she enjoyed listening to her stories. The old lady had lived all over the world, and her husband had died a few years back. It emerged after he died that they were almost destitute financially. And so she lived in her little cottage with no heating and no electricity, and survived almost completely on the kindness of friends and neighbors. Sophie liked listening to her talk about her experiences. It made her feel like she was worldly herself, even though Mark never expressed an interest in going abroad. The old woman painted a colorful picture of the most exotic places Sophie could imagine. Of cows roaming the streets in India, of African tribes dancing to the beat of a drum, of people more rural than they who lived off the land and were at one with nature. "I've seen real-life voodoo dolls. I've danced naked round trees. I've participated in animal sacrifice. The strange practices of others have always fascinated me," the woman said to her. "Perhaps, sometimes, to my detriment." One day, however, they got on to discussing the village. "Are you enjoying it here?" the old lady asked. Sophie wasn't sure how to answer. She had been living in the village for about 3 weeks by this point. Most days Mark was out, even on some weekends, and whenever he was home he was absolutely exhausted and locked into his own world. She felt very alone, but then she had felt like that in her marriage for a very long time now. "I'm getting used to it," she said truthfully. "How's the house?" It was spotless. She cleaned it every single day, for lack of anything else to do, but it was also cold and dark. And as the night started to draw in earlier and earlier, she found herself hurriedly shutting all the curtains and turning on all the lights for fear of what she might see out of the window. She had no idea why. The old woman waited for her answer, but she trailed off. leaving the sentence dangling in the dank air. Sophie thought of something to say. Did you get on with the people who lived there before? Did they come round much? A dark look passed over the old woman's face. She twisted her leathery fingers and coughed. I didn't much like them, she admitted, looking away from Sophie. We were friends, once, but I didn't always agree with the things they did, so we weren't friends anymore. They passed away there, didn't they? The estate agent had been required to inform them of this. The couple who lived there before had passed away in quick succession, one after the other, within the week, both from heart conditions. The deceased wife was found cradling her even more deceased husband on the sofa in the living room. Sadly, he had died 7 days earlier, and she had not thought to inform the police. His decomposing body had been found in her own lifeless arms by a neighbor concerned about the smell. Whilst Sophie was repulsed by this, Mark was thrilled. Death made houses cheap. Corpses were found there, yes, the woman said. Sophie thought her phrasing was interesting, but she couldn't quite put her finger on why. It's terribly sad. The old woman pursed her lips. Then the conversation moved on. Mark didn't get home until that night. Sophie had made spaghetti, but he called her to tell her he was delayed and had already eaten at work. She spooned the congealed, misshapen lumps into the bin, trying not to cry or to rekindle the old familiar feeling of suspicion. It was the fourth time that week he had got home as she was going to bed. This was her life now. As she cleaned up the mess in the kitchen, she heard an odd sound, like a floorboard creaking. She paused, stock still, like an animal sensing prey is near. She breathed out, trying to pull herself together. It was common for floorboards to creep or radiators to gurgle as the house was old, and it often made strange noises, and then she heard it. Sophie! She froze. Someone was calling her name. The E sound was elongated, like they were taunting her in a game of hide-and-seek. She stayed as still as possible, waiting for it to come again. It did not. Cautiously, she crept out of the kitchen and into the hallway. She wondered whether she should arm herself with something and grabbed a pot plant. What she would do with the pot plant, she did not know, but she felt better for holding it. "Who's there?" she called out. The house lay silent before her, giving nothing away. Who is it? She searched every room, but no one was there. She breathed out as she got to the bottom of the stairs and put the pot plant back in its place. Nobody was hiding. Loneliness did strange things to one's imagination. Over the next 3 weeks, she heard the sound twice more. The first time, Mark was in the house as well, having a bath upstairs. She was in the kitchen again, making brownies to see if it would appease his mood. It was Sunday afternoon, a day of rest. Mark's phone and his laptop lay across the kitchen table, and it had buzzed 3 times already in the time he'd been out of the room. Sophie wouldn't have been surprised if he needed to go back to the office today. As she stood over the stove, she heard it again. Sophie. The sound was far away, yet she knew it was her name. At first she thought it was Mark and went to find him. He was lying in the tub, reading the news on his iPad. Did you call me? She asked. Her heart was pounding a little. What? I asked if you'd called me. No, don't think so. She nodded and left him to it. She felt a prickly feeling crawling up her arms. It had to have been the house. The sound was coming from far away, and was most likely the pipes gurgling. The second time was a couple days later. This time she and Mark were lying in bed. She was lying, unsatisfied, in the scratchy sheets, trying to sleep after their all-too-quick lovemaking. Mark was already snoring. Sophie. She had definitely heard it this time. The sound had been close, like someone was standing outside the door. She shook Mark awake. What? He grunted in his sleep, irritated by her hand scrabbling at his back. I heard my name, she said. Someone's outside the door. You're just dreaming, Soph. I'm not asleep yet. How can I be dreaming? Go and check, will you, please? He grunted. Mark! for fuck's sake. He hurled himself out of the bed and flew the bedroom door open. Its creaky hinges groaned at the sudden movement. There's no one out here, she heard his voice as he padded around the landing. There's nobody here, Sophie. He stood in the doorway, his large frame blocking most of the light behind him. For a second, Sophie thought she could see a figure advancing up the stairs, something dark and slow. But then he moved, and there was nothing. You're just imagining things, he told her, turning off the lights and clambering back into the itchy sheets. I'm not, Mark. I heard someone. I've heard it 3 times now. Sophie, you know what you're like. You make things up. None of it's real, though, is it? She knew what he was referring to, the last time she'd made things up, as he put it. Mark, this place frightens me. But he wasn't listening anymore. In a couple of minutes, he was back to sleep. Sophie stayed awake the whole night, staring at the floor. A few days later, Sophie went on another visit to see her elderly neighbor. Today, she did not find her in good spirits. The old woman sat hunched over the fire, her wispy hair poking out of the bun she tied at the back of her head, her face pale and sickly. What's wrong? Sophie asked her. I'm not feeling very well, she replied. Why? What's happened? I'm old. I'll get older and I'll get sicker. Then I won't get old anymore. Her voice was resigned in a way that conflicted with her usually positive spirits. How are you getting on? She asked Sophie, changing the subject. Do you feel more at home yet? Sophie sighed, wanting desperately someone to confide in. She sat down on the armchair opposite, ready to relinquish her woes. No. If I'm being honest, she said, if anything, I feel worse. I've been hearing things. What kind of things? The woman's attention was pricked. She tilted her withered head away from the fire in Sophie's direction. Sophie suddenly noticed how her blue eyes were. She would have been pretty once. I've been hearing someone calling my name, but nobody's there. Is that so? The woman did not look surprised, just sad. Like what Sophie had said was inevitable as her own ill health. I know it's an old house, Sophie continued, but I know what I'm hearing. Last night it was completely clear, like it was just outside the door. Her neighbor nodded her head, drinking in the information. And I'm sure I saw a figure moving behind Mark on the landing. I know it sounds crazy, but there's something inside that house. The old woman sighed. You shouldn't be afraid, Sophie. It's just an old house. We can twist sounds to what we want to hear, or rather, what we don't. You're very isolated. Just put it past you. But I think I'm sending myself crazy. I know I've imagined things before, things which nearly destroyed our marriage because I was so paranoid, but this feels real to me, like someone's trying to get my attention. Sophie, in all the years I've lived next door to that house, I've never heard anything strange going on there. Honestly, we do this to ourselves when we don't have much else in our lives. I'm not trying to offend you or upset you, but that's what happens when our minds are not occupied. Take it from someone who knows what idleness is. Sophie nodded, feeling a little better. Perhaps her neighbor was right. It was just her imagination. She left the house, her burden feeling a little lighter now. She had confided in another soul. The old woman watched her go, a feeling of dread creeping upon her. Was it better that she'd lied, that she'd kept from her who those awful people really were, the ones who had lived there before? Yes, their bodies had been found. They could not torment the old lady anymore. They could not blackmail her for the things she had seen go on in that house. But the darkness never truly dies. She knew that. The kind of sins that went on in that house, rituals, as they had called them, they would never really die. To think that she had once been a willing part of it. She shuddered, hearing the door click as the girl left. The old woman knew she would be subject to the same fate when it was her turn. Bodies can die. Other parts of you never will. They had been living in the cottage for 3 months when Sophie found them. The underwear with the lipstick mark on them. What a cliché. She was almost embarrassed. She wasn't angry, because she had known for a long time. Yet she had hoped, perhaps naively, that moving to a new place meant it would have stopped. She'd obviously been wrong. She confronted him that night. He denied everything at first, before breaking down. Yes, he'd been seeing her on and off for a year now. Yes, he loved the other woman. No, Sophie had not been paranoid at all. Yes, he had carried on, lying even when his wife confronted him with her suspicions. Sophie left the house and was enveloped by the night. She let the darkness carry her through the village lanes, round the church, through the graveyard. She allowed herself to be invisible. After all, in Mark's eyes, she already was. Mark splashed his face with cold water in the upstairs bathroom. Christ, had he really been so stupid? He always checked his underwear. He showered after every encounter. He kept his condoms hidden in the boot of his car. He'd obviously been tired after he got in and flung them in the laundry hamper without thinking. And he'd got away with it the last time. He talked her out of it, made her think she was just paranoid. Had he destroyed his marriage? He cursed himself. It was then, as he was standing in the cool of the bathroom, that he heard it. Mark. The voice was soft and playful, almost a sing-song. Sophie? He stepped out of the bathroom, onto the landing. It came again. Mark! The voice was louder, more insistent this time, in a rasping, desperate way. A chill ran through him when he remembered that Sophie had gone out, that he had not heard her return. Yet it sounded like her voice. Was she calling him to forgiveness? He sulked down the stairs, following the direction of the sound. Mark! It was coming from the lounge. He was quite sure of that. He walked into the gloomy room, lit by an orangey lamp in the corner, and saw his wife sitting bolt upright on the sofa. The sofa faced away from him, so he could only see the back of her head. Her long brown hair gushed over her neat shoulders, though he was sure she worn it up today. There was something wrong with what he was seeing. Her hair did not look real. It almost looked like doll hair, made out of straw. The head was too large to be his wife. Her position, bolt upright, felt like he was looking at a corpse. And she was cradling something. As he drew closer, there appeared to be another figure on the sofa, one that was covered by a blanket. It was then that he saw the gnarled hand resting on the arm of the sofa. Where his wife's long fingers and chipped nails should be were white, withered digits with blackened fingernails. As he got closer, the hand clenched up. Sophie? He prayed she was playing a trick, but as he stood behind it, a feeling of pure dread came upon him. His breathing quickened. He could hear the beat of his own pulse. The figure, hearing him approach, began to slowly turn its head. Sophie was walking back to the house, deciding whether or not to go back in or just keep walking in the other direction. She had been crying, and her face was bloated from it. Though she couldn't feel anger anymore, she was just tired. It was as she was passing the front garden of the cottage that she heard the scream. It was a shrill, piercing scream, tortured, and it seemed to go on for minutes. Sophie stopped, knowing that it was coming from inside her house, knowing that it was her husband. What was she thinking? He'd told her that she'd been imagining things, hadn't he? That she was just paranoid. She hovered at the gate, debating whether or not to go in and investigate. All the lights seemed to be off. The house was still. Sophie kept walking down the lane, whistling as she left the little cottage in the distance behind her, and the echoes of the scream died in her ears. Black coat and red eyes. One summer, I was over at my aunt's house she herself had bought. I wasn't expecting something really pleasant-looking to have something weird in it. My aunt lived in a city a couple of hours away from mine. Our house was big, a bit too big, if you ask me, and was separated from the other houses a few meters away. In front of it was an empty lot. We were greeted by Anna, my aunt's helper. "Oh, ma'am, you're here. Everything's taken care of, and the dinner's ready. I'll just reheat it if you ever get hungry," she said with a smile. I looked around the living room. It was very neat. It had tan floor tiles. The window was covered with a curtain, a shade of pink. The furniture was arranged at the right angles, giving the room a much bigger look. Vases on top of the walnut coffee table, too. The kitchen and every room looked very elegant. Long story made short, it was a very nice-looking place. "Hey, you all right?" my aunt asked. "Yeah, just admiring the living room. It looks great. But don't you think the whole place is a little too big for only the two of you here?" My aunt gave a small chuckle and said, "Oh, it's better having it than not need it, than need it and not have it. Besides, Anna and I aren't the only ones staying here." I nodded. "Come on, I'll show you to your room." I followed her up the long stairs, walking through the hall. I came across a few rooms with nameplates hanging on them. "I guess she's right. The whole place's size is appropriate," I said to myself. "Here we are. Come see," as she opened the door. I found the room very comfortable looking. It had a good-sized bed, a stereo, hot damn it, thank God for that, a television, and its own bathroom. "This will be your room for the meantime, so make yourself at home. There are movies there that you can watch to keep boredom away, and there are some snacks downstairs in case you wanted to eat. Other than that, knock yourself out," she told me with a warm smile on her face, and I thanked her. Evening came. My aunt needed to go do her night job, so I was left with her helper. From time to time, Anna checked on me and asked if I needed anything, to which I politely declined. An hour later, Anna came to my room and told me she was going home. I said, "Okay, please take care." She replied to me, "You should be the one who should take care while alone." I'm not quite sure what she meant by that, but obviously it meant something bad. So I asked her, "What do you mean?" She looked down to her feet and said while stuttering, It's nothing. I just meant, is it okay for you to be alone here?" I told her I was okay with being alone since I'm used to being home alone back at my place and everything, so it's no biggie. "Okay, just don't forget before you sleep to sprinkle some rock salt on the windows and every door in the house to keep anything bad from happening. As well as lock the front door. I've locked the ones in the back." I replied with a confused look on my face, "Okay." Then she left. I assumed it was just some sort of provincial superstition my aunt and Anna believed in, so I shrugged it off. After she left, I got bored with what I was watching and settled on another movie, The Expendables, an action film. Halfway through the movie, I began feeling drowsy. I turned off the device and went to hit the sack and have a good night's sleep, trying to forget what Anna had told me. I woke up around midnight for unknown reasons. Sitting up, I felt as though if someone was watching me by the window. I just didn't care and thought that I may be just sleepy. My mind was playing tricks on me or something, but no. Even after I laid back, I still had this weird feeling. So I got up and washed my face in the bathroom, trying to drive away the thoughts. I lay down in the bed and felt the being watched feeling become stronger. Having enough of this, I looked out the window and saw a man standing in the middle of the street, wearing a long black coat being blown softly by the breeze outside. With his face obscured in the dark, I was petrified and felt numb. I couldn't move my body away from the windows. Closing my eyes, I prayed softly. Opening them, I saw the man still there, with a finger pointing towards me and a pair of red eyes with a look of anger. Horrified, I remembered what Anna said, to sprinkle salt in the doors and windows, so I ran down to the kitchen and grabbed the jar of salt and sprinkled it everywhere, on the floor, throwing them on the windows, every door I could find. I sprinkled them as well on my bedposts. After finishing, I put the jar of salt on the side table by my bed and hid under the blankets. The next day, my aunt came home and called me, "Adam!" Hearing her, I went downstairs and saw her. "What happened here? Why is there salt all over my floor?" I gave her a scared look and asked, "Who was that man last night, and what does he want?" My aunt looked horrified. "A man?" She sat down on the sofa and asked me, "The man, what did he look like?" I told her that he wore a long coat, red eyes. I couldn't see the face. She looked even more horrified and said, "I don't know that man myself, but I do know that where his house is built was where he died a horrible death." Hearing those words, I backed away slowly and told her I wanted to go home. On the way, I couldn't help remember what I saw. Although one thing's for sure, whatever that was, it's not just some presence. It wanted something. After hours. It was bordering midnight when my eyes started to droop. The worst part about the night shift in any job is that the poor soul who is assigned to it has to endure hours of boredom and sleep deprivation. I rested my arm on the cold marble countertop and tugged at my phone from my black jeans front pocket. I wore tight, skinny jeans as it was more fit for my body's physique, so naturally trying to get something out of any pocket requires actual effort. I pulled out my phone with so much force that in an instant it popped out and flew directly out of my hand. It toppled to the hand-paneled floor and cracked. I sighed and picked it up off the ground. Just as I thought, it was cracked from the right top of the screen straight down the middle. I swore a string of curses under my breath and set it on the countertop. It was one of three instances in which I actually was given the night shift at the local bar I generally worked at for a bit above minimum wage. I was 23 years of age and had just gotten out of college. Like anything in the real world, you need money to stay alive, so I worked a selection of day and night jobs to keep myself occupied while also gaining in profit. This job was one of three, though the others hold little importance to my recent discovery. I yawned and rested my head into my hand and started to doze. Just then I heard the door to the establishment open. A cold breeze filled the air and I was immediately jolted awake. The person came over to the bar and took a seat at the farthest end of the long row of stools. It was a man relatively in his early 20s, same as me, and was visibly troubled. He wore a long-sleeved black shirt with a light neon yellow construction vest over it and deep blue jeans. His hair was a mess. His shirt had dirt all over the front of it, and he was scruffy and unshaven. He had light blonde hair that was shaven and spiked up with gel along light blue eyes. He wore a small name tag at shoulder level that looked worn down and covered in dirt. It was scratched out and messed up, but I could make out the first letter of what seemed like a name. The letter was J. He looked tired, shady, and very down in spirits. But again, I worked at a bar and I was used to people like this one. "Hey, fella, hit me with a boilermaker. Yeah, thanks." His voice trailed off in a grumbled mess of whispers that I couldn't make out. I gave him a sturdy nod in before he rested his head on the counter. I took my phone into my front pocket and prepared his beverage. For anyone who doesn't know, a Boilermaker is a depth-charged drink. It's normally used for drinking games and for anyone who is intentionally trying to get drunk. Trust me. I myself have had my fair share of party groups in and out of this bar. Hell, I had to clean up a guy's vomit one night due to a lowly group of 9 adults around 30 years of age coming in after a rave took place down the street. I finished preparing the man's drink and placed it down on the counter in front of me. I looked around, but the man was nowhere in sight. I heard nothing and noticed that nothing was out of place. The only thing that managed to be different was there had been no man where there was before. I looked around, confused, with the drink resting on the counter in front of me. I shrugged and grasped the drink in my hand, preparing to drain it into the sink. When I turned my back, I heard a loud sneeze. I whipped around, and there he was. The man sat at the counter again, only he was closer this time. He looked at me with a sudden realization his drink was prepared, and looked at me with a questionable expression on his face. I was startled and confused. The man that had appeared right in front of me wasn't there not even 2 seconds ago. I blinked a few times and slapped myself lightly. He was still there. I shook my head and passed him his drink, apologizing for my odd behavior. I returned to the other side of the counter and stared at the clock on the wall, near the TV propped at the far end of the bar. 12:17. I thought deeply about what it was that had just happened. The man sitting on the far right corner had disappeared and then reappeared. I sat there for a few minutes, and in my peripheral vision, I saw the man place his head down on the counter, drink empty. I looked up and saw the man sitting there on the stool. I paused for a second and looked at him, unmoving. The man's chest rose ever so slightly, then fell equally. I took a good look at him before agreeing to myself that I would let him rest there. I went back to my own thoughts and pondered over them piece by piece, though before I locked into a possible solution, my thoughts were interrupted. I felt weird. Like when you know someone is watching you, as if you can feel their eyes upon you. I looked up to where the man was, and what I found startled me. The man wasn't there. I looked around the room and nothing was there, only the empty glass in which I had prepared his alcoholic drink in a few minutes ago. I closed my eyes tightly, leaned against the back counter. When I reopened them, what I found was bone-chilling. The man sat in the stool directly in front of where I stood. That wasn't even the worst part. He sat there, hands flat on the counter, staring at me. He sat there, unmoving. No sign of breathing, nor did he blink. His eyes kept strong and straight contact with my own. The man sat there like nothing else mattered, except for his eyes meeting my own. At this point, questions filled my mind. How is he sitting in that spot? Where did he even come from? When did he move? If he moved, I definitely should have heard him, right? What in the hell is even happening to me? Am I crazy? Am I dreaming? I slapped myself a few times in hopes of, I don't even know what, but I had hoped it would do something, anything, to get this man to stop staring at me, but to no effect, he was still there. Staring, just staring at me. Staring at my eyes. His own eyes frightened me. People say that the eyes are the windows to the soul, but his were more like brick walls, cold, solid, and lifeless. I looked back at the man holding eye contact as I inched away from him slowly. His body sat still except for his head. As I moved, his gaze followed me along with his head. I reached the end of the counter and walked to the other side of the counter. Hey, sir, are you all right? The man did nothing but watch me. I was about 3 meters away from him when he finally blinked. A wave of relief shrouded me, and I let out a deep breath that I didn't realize I was holding. It was a stupid guy playing a practical joke on me. My tensed-up body relaxed, and I walked my way back to my post behind the counter, keeping my eyes locked on the man, still weary but more at ease. I took out my phone and periodically raised my eyes to the man. I realized I had a new message. It was an unknown number that I hadn't recognized or seen before. I opened the message and it read, "Hey, this is John. Are you at work at the moment? I need to talk to you. It's urgent." I was dumbfounded. John was a friend of mine that I hadn't spoken to in years. I was in high school the last time we spoke, and that was when I found him cheating on his girlfriend with another girl. Ever since then, we stopped talking. But one thing made me sure I was crazy. Days after word got out that John cheated on his girlfriend, he was dumped and beaten by the second girl's boyfriend. John was despised by everyone at school. His parents weren't the most stable bunch, and they ignored him and his problems. Weeks after that, no one heard anything from him in the days that passed, until they found the body. John had killed himself that week, and the body had since started to smell and decay. And only one question begged my mind. Where was the man that sat directly in front of me? The man disappeared again. I looked over at the counter, and this time the stool was knocked over. I looked around the room until one thing caught my eye in the corner of the room. The man was standing facing the corner of the bar room. I took my phone in my hands, already spooked enough. I grasped it tight and punched 911. It rang and almost immediately was answered. I spoke to the operator, not allowing my eyes to leave the corner of the room. I explained the situation to them, leaving out the parts of the man disappearing so they didn't think I was crazy. The operator stated that the police would be on their way and would be there soon. I kept him on the phone as the police made their way. The man noticed the noise and in response started turning to face me. Why did the lights turn off? I'm scared. Please help me. Anyone there? When the man turned to fully face me, I studied his face. A long, toothy grin was plastered on his face, and his hands were hanging at his sides limply. I looked on as I made out the details. The one thing that made my eyes tear up and forced my body to seize in terrified horror. Where the man's once creepy eyes rested lay two hollow holes. Blood dripped from the two dark crevices. The man mouthed the words that I didn't care enough to try and decipher. He slowly walked towards me. Every step jolted his body and his arms swung limply. I caught one single phrase before I backed into my corner, grasping a nearby bottle of random liquid, wielding it as a weapon. Oh, I see now. He started to laugh maniacally, as his grin grew bigger and covering half of his face. The man's body stopped in its tracks and started to convulse violently as blood started to drip from his mouth and down his chin. His neck was snapped to the side and fell into itself with a sickening crunch. I blinked quickly in panic as a rope started to form around the man's neck, but just then it halted all at once. The smile, blood, laughter, and movement all stopped as it fell onto the ground with a thud and a splat. Flashing lights showed up quickly after that. I hid behind the counter with my legs curled up against my chest. I shook violently with fear and nearly jumped off as an officer tapped me back to my senses. I was asked some questions and they covered the body. I was led outside and soon police officers and cars gathered quickly. I sat on the edge of an open ambulance that held the now dead corpse of the terrifying man. I jolted awake immediately. My head rested upon my hand that was leaning against the cold marble countertop. I stood fully up and was still at work in the bar where I had been. I had dozed off and I rested against my hand and was breathing heavy. I moved my hand to my pocket and brought it up to my phone. No new messages. I looked around once again and the bar was empty. I had a nightmare. I walked over to the nearest sink and splashed cold water on my face and dried off. I looked around the room once more until I gave up and chalked it all up to my crazy imagination. I pulled my phone out and looked at the time. I grasped it tightly as it read 12:17. I sighed and allowed my arms to hang limp at my side. I still had no idea what had happened that night. I decided I would clean up some of the unused glasses that were left behind by customers beforehand. I went to the sink and I froze. A singular lonely glass stood in the middle of the sink. Inside the glass were two identical dark brown eyes. They floated in a pool of crimson blood that stared crazily back at me. They were his own.
Hey, it's Spooky Boo. You know, on Saturday nights, I get to sit by a nice roaring fire with a big bowl of buttery popcorn and a fizzy soda. I pop my legs on the leathery stool in front of me and turn on my favorite TV show, Creature Features. Why not? It's late, and those old scary movies are more fun than the latest slasher swinging his kitchen knife at some chick. While only the lucky can watch on TV in the San Francisco Bay Area, you can watch it on the web at www.creaturefeatures.tv. Check it out and watch it with me.